Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You always want to win the game. The next best thing is, and we've talked about this before we even started, was try to make them use pitching, even in a loss. So, you know, we hung around enough. At least Chapman had to pitch. You never know. Maybe that helps us. I mean, tonight was a tough night. We're going to go out on a limb and say it's a really important game tomorrow. We'll be really excited to play. You learn from your mistakes and then move on quickly, and we'll do that. It'll be exciting to come to the ballpark tomorrow. I think his command has been good for the last 3 years. But no, I don't think it's hurt it. And I think actually, I wouldn't want to do this all year, in fairness to him. But I think for a couple starts, I think he can handle it just fine. I think good players, good pitchers can do special things. And he's in that category. There's some pretty good players and teams out there. It was kind of an easy decision after talking to him. The harder one for me wasn't just him, but it was, you know, we had to make sure Trevor was okay, and the same thing with Josh.
I guess for me personally, I spend a little more time doing the different methods of recovery and stuff like that we have available to us, but I haven't, for me personally, haven't found much of a difference yet in the way I feel when I go out there on 3 days rest as opposed to four, and I don't know if that's just doing the extra recovery stuff to where you get as close to normal as you can possibly get, but that's really the only difference for me, is spending more time trying to recover on those 3 days instead of having 4 days to do it.
Low heartbeat normally. I mean, he's just able to control his emotions really well. I like the fact that he commands other pitches and fastball counts well. He's an artist. I mean, he could really make pitches. If you see the hitter blanch or take a pitch that is obviously a strike and he does not mention anything to the umpire and he knows it's a strike, that tells you how much his ball is moving and how fine it is. When I'm watching from the side and I see that, I know he's going to have a good night.
This is the ultimate dream. You dream of getting to the World Series, winning the World Series, but when you're out in your backyard as a kid, you know, playing Little League at the field with your friends, this is the moment you dream about. Game 7, 3-2, 2 outs, something like that, bottom of the ninth, you know. But it's always Game 7 in the World Series. So when we get there tomorrow, I'm just going to embrace the opportunity like I have the rest of this postseason, honestly. Approach it like any other game, simple thoughts, the same old thing.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Oh, my goodness. Well, well, well. What do we have here? We have the one thing that I said very clearly yesterday that we did not have. On yesterday's program, I repeated ad nauseum the following three words.
There is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow.
Over and over and over, we talked about this. It had to be yesterday because
there is no tomorrow.
And I will continue to repeat it again and again and again because it's true.
There is no tomorrow.
Now, yesterday I said that for a very good reason. And I ran down some of the statistics for you. I ran down some of the history for you. I ran down some of the Game 6 history for teams that had 3-2 leads. We talked about teams that had 3-1 leads. Talked about the number of times teams have come from behind, precious few, down 3-1 to win a world championship. And after we did all of the math and figured all of this, the historical analysis here, we decided it had to be done in game number 6 because
there is no tomorrow.
Well, guess what? We have a game 7. There was a tomorrow. As much as we tried to psych ourselves up into thinking there is no tomorrow, we found out that there is a tomorrow, and it is today. And my friends, anybody that is rooting for the Indians, I consider you my friend right now. Anybody. And that is a very precious few people in Northeast Ohio, out there in Cleveland, probably a lot of Indians fans here in Northwest Ohio. And maybe we talked about this, a few on the wrong side of Chicago, if you will, who are White Sox fans. They're probably pulling for the Indians. And then St. Louis fans, whose the Cardinals are arch rivals of the Cubs. Outside of that, there's the rest of the country pulling for the Cubs. And tonight, for neither the Cubs nor the Indians, there is no tomorrow.
There is no tomorrow.
Understand it. This is it. It's not a psych job anymore. It's not just treat it like there's no tomorrow. This is it. Winner take all, do or die. Here we sit. The Indians with the ace of aces, a man who has had just an absolutely dominant postseason, going 4-1 in 5 postseason starts to date, trying to set history or make history or join history by winning 3 starts in a 7-game World Series. Corey Kluber is 4-1 on this postseason with an ERA of 0.89. I want you to think about that for just a moment. Corey Kluber has straight up dominated and owned the opposition, including, yes, these Chicago Cubs. In Game 1 and in Game 4, can he do it again in game number 7? My answer is absolutely he can. But I will remind everyone before we get there that his nickname is Klubot, because they say he has no remorse. He shows no emotion. He shows neither highs nor lows. He is completely stoic, stone-faced, and operates as if he's a machine. But I've got bad news for all of my friends pulling for the Indians in game number 7 tonight. Corey Kluber is, in fact, not a robot. There is a shelf life on how much one elbow, one shoulder, one bicep and tricep, forearm, wrist. There's a limit to how much any one of those things, he is flesh and bone. There's a limit to how much any one of those things can take over the course of a 7-day period. And it's not that it's all within 7 days, but 3 days rest between starts 1 and 4, 3 days rest only between starts 4 or games 4 and 7. It is an extraordinary strain on the human body. If he were truly a cyborg, if he truly were Klubot, if he truly were Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Terminator, I wouldn't have too many concerns, but sadly, there is no chrome on his under his skin. There is no steel. There are no moving parts. He literally is just flesh and blood. So Klubot is going to have to try to find a way to be superhuman tonight. Now, the good news for me, as we get you started on this World Series Game 7 Wednesday afternoon of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. The good news for me is that Corey Kluber doesn't have to be the same dominant 6-inning stud that he was in games 1 and 4. He doesn't have to set a record with 9 strikeouts in the first 3 innings of a World Series game the way he did in game 1. He doesn't have to come back and be just as pinpoint sharp, shutting down that Cubs lineup over and over and over again, 3 times through. He doesn't have to do that. Because of the way yesterday played out, because of the hammering that the Indians took by the Cubs yesterday, the Indians did not have to use the heart of their bullpen, the 3 arms that are of the most importance to the Indians in all of their postseason success thus far. The arms of Andrew Miller, Cody Allen, and Brian Shaw, not necessarily in that order, but pretty much in that order. They are all good to go, as well as, of course, both teams having the full complement of their starting rotations ready to go in the last game of the year. For me, I would rather have Corey Kluber on his second short rest start of this series, his third of the postseason altogether. I would rather have Corey Kluber only be required to get me through 3 or 4, knowing that when I hand it off to the best bullpen in baseball, I'm handing it off to guys who are used to doing exactly what they're being asked to do. than if I were Joe Maddon asking for what I need from Kyle Hendricks, who, quite frankly, needs to be a lot better. Because if he only gives you three or four, and you've got to go to long relief in the middle innings, and you've got to turn to guys who haven't been in that role, and Maddon has already announced that ace John Lester will be available for long relief in the middle innings if necessary. You can say, wow, that's great for them. John Lester's awesome. It's true, and he is. But he is also not used to coming out of the bullpen. I like the fact that the Indians' most valuable bullpen arms are indeed fresh, while the most valuable Cubs bullpen arm belongs to Aroldis Chapman. The same Aroldis Chapman who was summoned out of the bullpen yesterday by Joe Maddon with a 5-run lead to throw 20 pitches, a significant majority of which were 100 miles an hour or more, because that is the kind of power pitcher he is, which followed the 42 pitches he had to throw in Game 5 on Sunday. That's 66 pitches in 3 days, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Obviously, Monday being the down day, but Tuesday, that's 66 pitches in 2 out of the last 3 days. And if he is available tonight, you can rest assured he is not going to be available for 2 or 3 innings of work the way he was on Sunday. Aroldis Chapman may be burned, may not have the command, may not have the juice that he needs to be what he is, the best power relief pitcher in baseball. I like the fact that when Terry Francona eventually walks out to the mound to take the ball from Corey Kluber, preferably with the lead over Hendricks, who I really think is indeed ripe for yet another fall in the same way that he was taken down in the first time around in Game 3. I really believe that when Terry Francona walks out there to take the ball, he is going to feel very, very good about the guys that he's bringing in. We know that Joe Maddon will not feel that good. How do we know this? Because even with a 5-run lead yesterday, in game number 6, he looked at Rondon and said, nah. He looked at an entire stable of relievers and said, I don't trust any of you to get me out of this and finish this thing off with a 5-run lead. I'm going to go get Aroldis. I'm going to go get Chapman, even though he just went 42 pitches in an 8-out save on Sunday. That does not inspire confidence in your relief pitching, in your bullpen staff. And if they don't have the confidence of the manager, they sometimes can question the confidence they have in themselves. And I think that if this becomes a battle of bullpens, which Game 7s in World Series almost inevitably do, then I think the Cleveland Indians are still well on their way to a world championship. I called yesterday for an Indians win, and I said it might even be one of those going-away type of wins, a 7-2 or 3 type of ball game. Turns out I was right on the going away. I was wrong in the order. I thought the Indians would be on the plus side. Instead, it was the Cubs who won going away, in large part thanks to some Grapefruit League mistakes, or some, in the Indians' case, Cactus League mistakes, in game number 6 of the World Series in the outfield. Center fielders not taking control and calling off right fielders. Right fielders being a little too overly aggressive and then not knowing whether or not he's going to have the green light to keep going. The entire thing was a mess. Should have been out of that inning with 1 run, which changes Josh Tomlin's approach completely. Completely. If it's just the Brian Homer and that's it. But you allow that to happen. All of the energy left the ballpark. All of the energy left the fans, and that's, of course, what allowed the next inning to happen. That's of course, what allowed the grand slam. Obviously, Tomlin kept giving up singles, and they just methodically worked their way to the bases loaded, and then, bam, here comes Otero, and there goes the game at 7-0. But all of that happened yesterday did not kill the Indians' World Championship chances, because unlike what I was preaching yesterday, in fact, there was and is a tomorrow. That day is today. And given what Corey Kluber has given them, given how Corey Kluber has simply carved one of the best lineups in baseball, not once, but twice, given that fact that when Corey Kluber is eventually done, whether it's after 3 or 4 or 5, if he's still dealing into 6, that they're going to hand it off to the best bullpen in baseball, and there is no way the Cubs can make the same claim if and when the day is done for their starting pitcher, Kyle Hendricks. That's the soapbox that I'm on this afternoon. That's the monologue. I still feel confident. I still feel extraordinarily confident, in fact, because of Corey Kluber. I wanted yesterday, and I think the Indians wanted yesterday, but here's the difference. The Indians wanted yesterday. The Cubs needed yesterday, because if they didn't have it, their season was over. Tonight, that is no longer a factor. Now both teams need it, because the season is over, no matter the outcome. For one city, for one fan base, outside of geographical boundaries, because again, Cushlin and I, and many others listening to us right now, have Northeast Ohio roots. We grew up around Cleveland, grew up Indians fans, but you don't have to be in Cleveland to be a part of this. There is one fan base, just like Chicago Cubs fans are all over the country. You don't have to be a North Sider. You don't have to be a Chicagoan in any way, shape, or form. But one fan base that has been rooting forever for their particular club, one that has been waiting 108 years, the other that's been waiting 68 years, is about to experience euphoria that they will remember for the rest of their lives. The other is going to experience a heartbreak that they will probably not be able to describe for the rest of their lives. For if the Indians blow a 3-1 series lead and don't win that first elusive championship since 1948, they'll never forget how each one of those losses felt. If the Cubs don't finish the comeback, if they fall down 3-1 only to come back and seize momentum and control of the series with a narrow win in Game 5 and a dominating win in Game 6 and then fall flat in Game 7, there will be a belief in the heart of every Cubs fan, young and old, that there is a curse. That Billy Goats and Bartmans and everything else that you can think of are real. And that 108 years not being enough of pain and misery, that there's going to be yet another added to it, they're going to believe it'll never happen. It will be devastating for them. Senior citizens, the elder generation of Cubs fans, are going to be convinced they will die without ever seeing that elusive world championship. So that's what's on the line tonight. I will take my chances with Kluber and the best bullpen in baseball against Hendricks, who might be the Cy Young winner in the National League, by the way, and a questionable bullpen, especially given the way Joe Maddon used it yesterday with Aroldis Chapman. That's how I'm going to roll with it, and I want to know how you feel about it. 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. We want to get your thoughts on game number 7 tonight. How is it going to play out? And don't just give us the what, give us the why as well. Jim Cushlin is alongside. Cush, be my guest.
You know, I keep coming back to a couple things on, you know, all of this. And some of it is something I would have said before the series started and then felt even more justified after the first 2 games when it was split. And my synopsis of the series at the time was, okay, you're going to go Kluber 3 times. You got to win those 2, steal another game, and then you'd have Kluber again in a game 7. And, you know, I kind of like those odds to a certain degree. You'd have to, in a way. I think the thing that's getting a lot of Cleveland guys down at this moment in time, though, is the fact that it was 3-1 at one point. Like, even in my synopsis that I just laid out, I would have had it 3-2 Cubs coming back to Cleveland for game 6. And like I said, I felt even more justified in that call after the first 2 games were split. So what's strange here is the Indians have the pitching advantage. And due to the injuries, that's not something outside in non-Kluber starts that we've really been able to legitimately say, despite that being one of the strengths of this team
in the entire season. And that's only because of strategy. That's only because of philosophy. You know, Joe Maddon decided he wasn't going to match Terry Francona and go with Lester in games 1 and 4 so that he would have him available in 7. He is their unquestioned ace. He decided, nope, I'm going to go ahead with Lackey, and then I'm going to go ahead with Lester in 5. And then and that means I've got Hendricks, who, again, he might not be the ace, but he still might be the Cy Young winner in the National League. But he chose not to have his ace available to start game 7. And Terry Francona, indeed, chose the opposite.
Yeah.
He wanted Kluber 3 times if need be. Maybe out of necessity, because if he had his full complement of starting pitchers and Carlos Carrasco was part of this equation, it might very well tonight be Carrasco against Hendricks. And it might be, you know, and I don't know whether that would be an advantage for either to either team or not, because it depends on what Carrasco was doing since he broke that hand. But we do know that Terry Francona, given the situation that he was in, knew he had to get Kluber 3 times. And that's why we have, as you just pointed out, it's weird to say there is a pitching advantage. But there is. It's weird to say that for a team that has been ravaged by injuries. Salazar relegated only to minimal bullpen duty. And Carrasco, of course, not a part of this at all. It is an advantage, Kluber over Hendricks. It's an advantage in experience. And then, as I pointed out, it's an advantage in those bullpens.
Yeah, it absolutely is, especially the bullpen case. Not just the fact that Miller and Allen and them haven't gone since for a couple games, and then you have the day off. But and it's not even just Chapman being out there with the call. You know, took one off the ankle. That's going to be an interesting one if he comes back out there. Either way, the other thought that's been going through my head since last night, given the pitching matchups, given where each team stands, I think whoever has a lead after 3 is the one who wins this game tonight. I really do. And if you're and the Indians, it would not surprise me, Bob. And I'm just, you know, spitballing hypothetically here. 4th inning, Cubs are up 1. It would not surprise me at that point that you'd still see Miller for 1, 2, maybe even 3 full innings, even if down 1 in this one tonight.
I don't disagree with that last part at all. You're right. Miller is obviously doesn't have to be saved for another game.
Right.
In another inning tomorrow, he is going to go until he can't throw anymore or isn't as effective anymore. And I don't think he has got a limit on that, to be honest with you. Not that he'll go 6 innings, but you understand the point. I can see that. I don't know if I would go as far as to say whoever's leading after 3 wins, because I am not as confident, as I explained in my monologue, in that Cubs bullpen. More important, including if they bring a starter like Lester or Lackey to go long relief, say, in the 4th. And the reason for that is they haven't done that, and it's literally a, you have no idea where that's going to lead. You just don't know what you're going to get out of a starter asked to come in out of the pen on short rest.
It's
just not the same thing. And then secondly, if you actually go to your actual bullpen, you know, your relief pitchers, again, Joe Maddon, in my opinion, one of the best managers working in the game today, but I think Joe Maddon may have alienated some of those guys yesterday. I don't, and I'm not saying they're going to be bitter and hold a grudge, but I mean, he has put doubt into their minds. And if doubt is in their minds from the manager, well, then doubt can kind of be created in the pitcher himself. When he went to Chapman, unnecessarily plus 5, as if saying, I don't trust any of you fools. He's the only guy I trust out here. I'm telling you, there's something that can be in those guys' heads. Whereas, you know, when Terry Francona gives the ball to Miller, when he gives it to Shaw, when he gives it to Allen, there's not any question. Nobody is thinking, boy, I hope he really thinks I can do this. I need to be pumped up here. He knows, or excuse me, they know, each one of them, that the manager trusts and believes in him and is going to finish the job.
The other thing that pops into my head, and because you're not the only one, I've been hearing this since last night as well, the possibility that a John Lester for the Cubs may come out there. I honest to goodness, Bob, I think, as an Indians guy, I say bring it on, and here's why. 2 reasons. 1, the whole he can't throw over to first thing. You're going to bring him out there in the middle innings? What happens, you know, when Lindor or Rajay Davis, because I got to believe it's going to be Rajay Davis, not Tyler Naquin, by the way. What happens when they get on base, 1-run game in the middle inning, and you got Lester doing his not throwing over thing?
Well, two things to that. They would never bring him in with a runner on.
True.
Won't be mid inning. And then second of all, you know the drill. Yes, when a runner is on, it's difficult for John Lester to keep them close, but you got to get on. And he doesn't let a lot of runners on.
That is true.
Especially, you know, in this postseason, he has been terrific, and you got to get on in order to make that happen. And lastly, this running game of the Indians, and they led the league in steals, and Rajay Davis led the league. It was supposed to be an enormous factor in this game. It hasn't been. It has not been. Lindor himself has been caught twice.
Twice.
Including almost getting picked off at first. And would have been had Lester been able to throw over. But the running game has been minimized in large part by that cannon of Contreras back there. He's been
That's the second thing with Lester. David Ross is Lester's personal catcher.
Not a worry. Not a worry, because what did you see from David Ross?
You don't think they'll swap? I mean, David Ross has been lineup.
He has not been the equal of Contreras back there, but he has been playing phenomenal.
No, I'll agree with that. He is, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's a big running game on Ross, even when Lester has been pitching.
In a way,
Ross is very good.
The bringing up of the catchers is not so much the defensive thing that you're talking about. To me, it's offensive. Are you going to, if you're Joe Maddon and you're thinking, I'm going to bring in Lester at some point, do you start David Ross? Do you then swap out catchers middle of the game?
I seriously
doubt it. Maybe Contreras' bat goes away.
I sincerely doubt it. I mean, if Contreras is catching Hendricks to start, he will stay in the game until they need.
Well, then that's another advantage, Indians, because Contreras doesn't usually catch Lester. That's the point of David Ross at Chicago.
No, but my point is they're not going to start David Ross for a guy for a pitcher that doesn't usually pitch to him, because Lester might come in later. And there'd be no way in the world they would do that.
Right. No,
they would only do that if Lester was starting. Lester is a question as to whether or not they'll use him
in
middle relief. So they're not gonna start the wrong catcher for Hendricks.
I agree.
In the off chance, just because Lester might come in. If they go to Lester for, what's it gonna be? An inning or two. I mean, really, it's all you're going to be able to get out of him. You're going to survive it with Contreras behind the plate.
And I guess then they might try that, but I'm just saying that's something to keep an eye on, because, if you're an Indians fan, defensive things aside, when it comes to the three catchers the Cubs are carrying, when it comes to them at bat, you want it to be Ross if you're an Indians fan. I'll just go ahead and say it like that.
Yeah, and that's fine. But you know what? That old man has played very well.
You are correct. Kudos to him on that front.
I will. I'll give him all the credit in the world. He's 39. He's hanging him up, and he is going out with a bang, because he is throwing guys out. He is making great plays on swinging bunts and a couple of other plays that I saw him just smother, and great throws to first and stops that, you can tell he's just leaving it all hang out there on the field in his career finale games.
Right.
And each one of the last two could have been his last game ever. And the ones that he's played in, obviously. And so to me, I don't see a huge drop off. I do see a slight drop off because Contreras is cannon. I mean, he's just like, my son calls him a ninja. He's like a ninja back there. The way he is. He's a great defensive catcher, and he comes out of the crouch for the snap throw to first better than anybody I've seen in a long time. And I mean in a long time. Just a really, really tremendous defensive catcher. So there is a slight drop off there, but not enough of one that they would go ahead and say, not enough of one where they would essentially just write David Ross out of this whole thing. So they'll start him, and he'll catch Hendricks, I believe, and he'll go. But I don't think they'd hesitate to use Ross if they had to, but they surely wouldn't start him just on the chance that Lester may come in.
I could probably agree with that. Just throwing that out there, that if Lester does come in, that's something else to possibly keep an eye on. That's
There's so many elements to talk about in this game today, a lot of them. And you know what? It's not just World Series time right here on the Extravaganza. Coming up, we are going to talk with Matt Lodi in a few minutes. He's covering the Game 7 out there at Progressive Field in Cleveland. We'll get his final thoughts on this thing before the 8 o'clock first pitch. By the way, exclusive coverage on the radio in Toledo. Your Toledo home of the World Series is ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. That exclusive coverage will begin at 7, first pitch at 8 o'clock right here. You won't get it anywhere else. So we're going to have that conversation with Lodi coming up. And we are going to talk a little football at the bottom of the next hour, about 55 minutes or so from now, as UT is going to be playing football while the world is watching baseball. UT and Maction at Akron tonight. So we're going to hear from Jason Candle, the head coach of the Rockets, at about 4:35 today. So a lot of stuff to do. And by the way, as long as I'm on the subject of college football, before we get out and get ready for Matt Lodi, let me remind you of the college football nirvana. It is your heaven at the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore in Sylvania, Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe. Hundreds of new Nike products in stock, and quite frankly, there are hundreds of new products arriving daily. Jim Damshorter keeps those folks busy over there, the great staff at the Buckeye Store and More, stocking up on everything Scarlet and Gray. It's the largest store in Ohio dedicated to Buckeyes gear. And right now, 10% store-wide savings, whether it's Buckeye gear or Michigan gear from the Wolverine Fan Zone, or the Fighting Irish, Spartans, Rockets, Falcons, and Tigers fan zones. It's all there at the Buckeye Store and More. It's 5700 Monroe Street in Sylvania, right between Ralphie's and Dave's in front of Prometica. You can't miss it. Big inflatable Brutus is on the roof waving you in to the Buckeye Store and More, the college and pro superstore. Talking more World Series directly from Cleveland, site of game number 7 tonight with Lodi right here coming up.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza, and we roll on with more World Series discussion. Game number 7, it is winner take all tonight. The Indians had a 3-1 lead. The Cubs came storming back, a narrow win in game 5 at Wrigley, and then a dominating performance last night against a clumsy Indians team in game 6. And here we are, the Indians ace Corey Kluber against Kyle Hendricks, who might be the National League Cy Young winner, but he's still not the ace of that staff. It all comes down to those two starters and whose bullpen, and it will be all hands on deck, whose bullpen can lock down the other lineup for a world championship drought-ending victory tonight. 108 years for the Cubs and 68 years for the Cleveland Indians, an unbelievable turn of events and set of circumstances, all going to play out tonight at Progressive Field. Joining us now to talk about it from Progressive Field is Mr. Matt Lodi, who runs NEOSportsInsiders.com and also reports for the Associated Press radio side out there in Cleveland. Mr. Lodi, how you doing, brother?
Hey, Bob. Good afternoon.
All right. Let's first get your reaction to what happened last night. I don't think any of us saw this coming. Nobody saw the Indians getting blown out. I actually thought that the Indians, if there was to be a blowout, they were going to win a little bit going away yesterday. I predicted around a 6-1 or a 7-2 kind of Indians game. It went the other direction, so obviously I didn't know what I was talking about. Your reaction to that one?
Well, I was right with you, Bob. I thought the Indians would win that game last night. I thought being back at home with all that momentum and, of course, Josh Tomlin, who had been so good in the postseason, I thought with everything on their side, they were going to come out last night and win that game. And I, like you, was very surprised. I thought with the warmer weather, they'd catch up to Jake Arrieta's fastball a little bit better. And, you know, got to credit Jake. He did a tremendous job again. I don't think he was as dominant as people are portraying. I mean, he still gave up 2 runs and 5 2/3, but that was good enough. I mean, certainly in that position when you're up 7-0 before the other team comes to bat in the third inning, you've got a major, major advantage. We're almost like where you're just trying to get out, you know. So, you know, I thought he was good. I thought the Cubs' offense was very good. And, of course, obviously, as we've talked about, I'm sure you've talked about it extensively, the game-changing play early in that ball game with Tyler Naquin and Lonnie Chisenhall playing, you get it, no, I got it, now you get it. And that, you know, that just changed the momentum of the game. It took the crowd completely out of the game. And, I mean, that crowd was as loud for the introductions, for the first pitch, for everything else, as a crowd that I've ever heard at that ballpark. And for them to have basically been ejected from that ballpark, you know, from really just being able to cheer that team on, that just kind of took the wind out of the sails, the air out of the balloon, whatever, you know, you want to say about it. But it was frustrating. And for the Indians, basically all they got to do now is just put it behind them, just like the Cubs did after they lost game four on Saturday night in pretty decisive fashion, and come back out tonight and just win one more game. That's all you really got to do.
Yeah, you know, more importantly to me, that fly ball that landed between Naquin and Chisenhall, it didn't just take the crowd out of the game, as you just described effectively. It took Tomlin out of the game. Now, I'm not saying he would have come out and just painted a masterpiece in the second, third, fourth innings and gone on to win that game, but I truly believe he was rattled in a big, big way by not getting out of an inning with just the solo home run damage, which he should have. That was a fly ball off the end of the bat. It's a routine fly ball. You know, you just need an experienced center fielder out there to call off the right fielder, and the inning's over, and let's go take care of business. But when it becomes what it became, I think it rattled Josh Tomlin more than he'll ever admit. And then, of course, he is just not able to finish pitches and put away hitters. You know, they end up loading the bases before he departs, and it goes to Otero, who gives up the slam. I just feel like the entire momentum of the game changed, not just in the park with all of the energy you just described, but really for Josh Tomlin.
Yeah, no question about it. And the one thing, and I even asked Josh about this, you know, Josh is a ground ball pitcher, and I know that it was a nice day. Beautiful night, really, for baseball last night. It reminded you kind of like a early to mid-June, more so than November or even October, for that matter. But Josh just couldn't get anything on the ground. Everything was in the air, and I just felt it was almost like one of those August outings where, if it was a game in August, I'm sure that, you know, Terry Francona may have left him in there a little bit longer. He may have given up 6-7 runs before it was all said and done, before Dan Otero gave up the grand slam. And, you know, everything played against the Indians even in that situation last night, because obviously Otero has been fantastic this season to the point where I was very surprised when I looked this up. He'd only given up 2 home runs the entire season going into that game last night, and then he gives up the grand slam to Addison Russell. That, again, really, for more intensive purposes, just, you know, kind of just ended the game, I guess, if you will, because the Indians, you know, coming back from 7 in the regular season is hard enough. Doing it in the playoffs with all that tension and all that, you know, the atmosphere and everything, is it's just almost impossible. But, you know, at that point, all you're looking to do if you're the Indians is, number one, save your bullpen, which they did effectively do last night with the Miller-Shaw, you know, Cody Allen connection all being fresh and ready to go tonight. And also, if they could have gotten in that game, kind of chip away a little bit. You know, Kipnis hit the home run, and you kind of felt like they had some things going there a little bit offensively, but obviously they couldn't get it done. So, yeah, I don't think Josh really would have been effective anyway. Just wasn't his night, and just obviously I know he's crushed by it. Wanted to do it in front of his dad. Would have been a great story, but just wasn't meant to be.
No, it really wasn't. We're talking to Matt Lodi with NEOSportsInsiders.com and also the Associated Press out in Cleveland covering Game 7 of the World Series. So, how, you know, there's an old adage about baseball. When it comes to momentum, you know, momentum, I think, plays a big, big role in an NBA series, a 7-game series. You get rolling on somebody and you get running and dunking and so on and so forth. And you can continue that right where you left off the next game. Momentum matters. In baseball, the old adage or the old cliche is momentum lasts only until your next night's starting pitcher.
Right.
And it is so very, very true. You could be on a 3 or 4-game losing streak. That's why they have quote unquote aces that are quote stoppers. Because it doesn't matter how bad you're playing. If you get the right pitcher out there, momentum over, you know, your losing streak is over. Or if you face the other team's ace, you know, your winning streak is over. So momentum can be overrated in the game of baseball, but still you had a 3-1 lead. And when a 3-1 lead becomes a 3-3 tie now, and the other team is looking like a team of destiny, and it's the whole 108 years, lovable losers, Cubbies finally break through, blah, 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 crap fest that you get from the national media on this story that everybody in the country loves except for Indians fans and maybe the occasional Cardinal fan that hates the Cubs. when you get into that story, there is some momentum, I think. There is some life where the Cubs are just feeling like we are destined to do this, not just to win the championship for the first time since 1908, but to do it in dramatic style coming down from 3-1.
Well, you know, certainly if you're the Indians, you got to kind of block that out. I mean, there's, you know, you've lost 2 games in a row, and I've looked extensively at numbers and, you know, statistics, just to see, you know, I mean, how effective and how much do you play into this thing tonight? You know, for the Indians' point of view, look, you've lost 2 games in a row at home. There's only been one time this entire season you've lost 3 games in a row at home, and that was Minnesota back in early August when the team was just not able to get anybody out in that Twins lineup. But, you know, again, a lot of things then you could look at and just say, you know what, none of it matters. It really just comes down to, you know, like you mentioned earlier, the starting pitching. And if there was, you know, forget the team around you. If you had Kyle Hendricks on one side, Corey Kluber on the other, I think you're going to take Corey Kluber, especially with what he's done in this postseason. 5-1, an ERA under 1. And the other thing, and I looked up some numbers today on it, if you look at the splits on Kyle Hendricks, he is a much more dominant pitcher at home at Wrigley Field, at the friendly confines, if you will, out in Chicago than he is on the road. He's given up 9 of his 11 home runs on the road. His ERA is almost 3 on the road as compared to like 1.2 at home.
Right.
And the Indians, I thought, had a great approach against him in game 3. I thought that they, you know, they got traffic, they took pitches, they made him work, and I think they're going to try to do and emulate the same thing, which is why I still give the Indians the advantage. And again, as I keep talking about throughout the day here, the bullpen. I just think, you know, look at Joe Maddon having to use Chapman last night. That basically tells you, Bob,
what does it tell us?
And, you know, and that really tells me that...
Matt, hold on. I think your phone cut out. I heard a long pause when you said that basically tells you, Bob, and then I heard nothing. I thought we lost you for a second.
Sorry about that, Bob. I was going to say, it tells me that him going to Chapman as early as...
Oh, it's doing it again.
In a 6-run game.
You're cutting out, Matt. Again, you cut out on us, right? At the same time, you're saying the same thing.
Sorry.
That's all right. I know you're probably
just getting off the road here. You got me now. Is that better?
Understood. I appreciate you. Don't get in a wreck talking to us, by the way.
No, not at all. But what I meant to say, obviously, there is that the fact that Madden went to Chapman in that situation last night tells me that he doesn't trust anybody in that bullpen other than Chapman. And, you know, where the Indians, you've got all those interchangeable parts. You know, even though Danny Otero had a tough time last night with the Grand Slam, you've got him, you've got Brian Shaw, you've got Cody, and, of course, you got Andrew Miller. So I still think at the end of the day, the Indians have the advantage going into tonight. And even though Corey Kluber's on short rest, I'll take a short rest Corey Kluber over Kyle Hendricks right now, the way Kyle pitched in Game 3 any day of the week.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I completely agree with that. And as you pointed out, you know, Corey Kluber, first of all, has had a performance of the for the ages in this postseason. 4-1 with a 0.89, I believe, ERA.
Yeah, 0.89. 5-1, I believe, or 4-1, as you said. He really looks like, to me, if you look at the numbers, Bob, he looks like Madison Baumgartner a few years ago.
Yeah, he really does. And the difference, of course, is Baumgartner came out of the bullpen to finish that game with five innings of scoreless relief to win the World Series 2 years ago. But
right.
But Kluber's going to ask to be doing that at the beginning of this game, not scoreless relief, but need four or five scoreless innings. And as I was kind of just, you know, joking a little bit earlier on before he came on, his nickname might be Klubot, but he is not, in fact, a robot. He is made of flesh and blood. And guess what? There is going to be fatigue on those, in those muscles, in those joints, in the tendons, in everything, elbows, shoulders, and all the way down the line. So how many innings can you realistically expect Terry Francona? How many effective innings can you realistically expect him to get from this ace who's having such a great postseason one more time around?
Well, you know, again, looking at Cody Allen, looking at Andrew Miller, could you get five innings from those two guys combined? Because I think you can. I'll be perfectly honest.
If you only get five out of those two, I think we have a problem.
I think honestly,
Matt, and I'm sorry to interrupt your answer, but I think six is minimum. I think if you can get Kluber through the lineup just one time, that's three innings. If he can get a pitch in nine outs without damage, that's three innings. And I think you absolutely can get three innings out of Andrew Miller. He's got that in him. We know that. He has gone longer before. He has started before. So Andrew Miller, absolutely fresh as he can be. I think you can get at least six out of those two guys, and if you can just turn a lead over to him, as we know, I don't care if it's after three or four or whatever, you know, everybody else is fresh. Everybody that really matters here in terms of Shaw and Cody Allen and so on, everybody is good to go.
Right, and that's what I was going to say. I mean, I think if you're Terry Francona, that's why I think you did work so hard last night and was not tempted to go to those guys because you thought to yourself, you know, hey, listen, this isn't going to happen tonight. We just got to, you know, got to get ready for game seven. We're going to do it, and we're going to do it the way we've done it all season by using this bullpen to the best of our advantage. And tonight, like I said, if you could get four innings out of Corey Kluber, I think he's done the job. I really do. I mean, if you get five, I mean, my goodness, the guy should be, you know, the guy should get the MVP, no question about it, and he probably will if they win this game tonight.
Well, but if he goes four scoreless, yeah, in my mind, and they win, he is still the MVP because of what he's done all series long. And I think that's gravy now because I'm not just saying this, but I really believe you can get three solid out of Miller, and that takes you out of the eighth. If you get four out of your starter and three out of Miller, you go to the eighth, if that's the direction that Francona chooses to go. I mean, you never know. He could get four out of Corey Kluber and then go to Shaw, for example, and save Miller for 6, 7, and 8 as opposed to 5,
right,
6, and 7, that kind of thing, and set up Cody Allen. So
Cody Allen.
Yeah, so
there's a lot of
opportunities there. And on the flip side, you talked about it briefly, you know, with the bullpen in Chicago. Clearly Joe Maddon told everybody out there in that pen, you know what, I don't trust a damn one of you to even hold a 5-run lead. I'm going to Aroldis. And he gave him 20 pitches. That he did not need on that arm, especially given that it's a power arm, over 100 miles an hour on a majority of those pitches. If it comes down to the bullpens, absolutely it is an Indians advantage. What did you make of him going to Chapman yesterday with a 5-run lead?
Well, I was stunned. And, you know, I think I was stunned more with the fact that he did it when he did it. I mean, because it was a 5-run game when he did it? I was thinking to myself, like, are we kidding ourselves here? Because, you know, and of course, if you're the Cubs, I mean, what almost happened to Chapman was by far the worst thing that could ever happen, and that is he almost got injured. I mean, that was incredibly difficult circumstances, Bob. And you know, and I think that when you look at, you know, how Joe Maddon has managed this World Series, both guys have done a good job. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Joe because I think, you know, him bringing the team back from 3-1, he's made some good decisions. But at the same time, he may regret that Chapman decision last night. He really might, because I think if you look at it.
Right. And by the way, I think Joe Maddon, along with Tito, quite frankly, I think they, and I know a lot of people got on Buck Showalter because of the wild card game and the Zach Britton story, but I think those are three of the three best managers in baseball today.
No, I agree.
I love every one of those guys, so I got nothing but love for Joe Maddon. But you're right. If this comes down, game seven comes down to a Cubs lead where they need to hold for an inning or two, and Chapman can't go two because of what he did yesterday, and he can only go one. And if he goes one, he's not as sharp because he's a little fatigued. He will never, despite being what I just said, one of the best two or three managers in the game in this day and maybe in the recent era, he'll never, ever wipe that off his legacy.
No, and even if, you know, let's just say for argument's sake, you know, again, dream scenario, Chapman's in the game in the ninth inning, kind of like Jose Mesa in 97, it's 2-1, and let's say, you know, he walks Lindor and Napoli goes deep on him and they lose 3-2. I mean, you know, and everybody will then at that point obviously point to why did he have to pitch in game six when they were so far ahead. And, you know, I do understand, you know, the philosophy of, hey, it's all or nothing, we got to protect the lead, but I kind of just felt the lead was well protected anyway last night. I really didn't think the Indians were in a position to challenge that lead.
I come in, if I'm Joe Maddon, I come in with some of my regular bullpen guys, and I don't care if it's Rondon or anybody else, and if they wipe three of the five runs off of that lead and now it's a two-run game, all right, I got to do what I got to do. But I think it was an unfortunate.
But not a five-run or six-run lead, no.
Right,
I didn't agree with that.
All right, Maddie, we are out of time, so before we go, make the call. Whose city is celebrating and popping champagne? Is it all over Cleveland tonight, or is it all over Chicago? Is Wrigleyville finally exorcising the demons, the ghosts of Billy Goats gone by, et cetera? One drought comes to an end tonight. Whose is it?
Well, I got to be honest. While the Cubs offense, you know, came to life yesterday, I do believe that Corey Kluber is the right guy for the right time for this Indians team. And I do think that bullpen being in a position to pitch five, maybe six innings, like you mentioned, I think it's going to be enough. I think the Indians at home, they still have played so well at home this year. I think they're going to do enough to get maybe four runs, maybe even five. I see like Indians 4-2, maybe 5-2, somewhere around there. I just think this Indians pitching staff is going to be able to do enough tonight to get the job done. And I think there'll be a parade here in Cleveland on Friday.
I love the sound of that, Matt Lodi. I hope from your mouth to the ears of the baseball gods that they let it be done. Matt, thanks so much for taking the time. I appreciate it. Get inside that building and get ready for the game. Enjoy it, my friend, and we'll chat again sometime in the aftermath.
Okay, thanks so much, Bob. Appreciate it.
You got it. Matt Lodi joining us from Cleveland there, Northeast Ohio. I'm sorry, NEO Sports Insiders. NEO, abbreviated, sportsinsiders.com and the Associated Press out there. All right, on the other side, we're going to shift gears on the other side of the Sports Center, which is coming your way, to talk college football. Why? Well, because the first college football playoff rankings are out, and we're going to get some reaction from Drew Hallett, who writes for maizeandbrew.com, the Michigan site. The Wolverines check in at number 3 in the CFP rankings for the playoffs, despite being number 2 in both of the national polls. We'll see what Drew thinks about that. We'll also talk a little college football coming up with Jason Candle, head coach of the Rockets, who take on Akron tonight out in Akron. And as long as we're on that college football subject, what do you say we qualify for you for a chance to go to the college national championship game? It's January 9th in Tampa, 2 days in Tampa, round-trip airfare, four-night hotel stay in Tampa, 2 upper-level tickets to the game, rental car with parking, and a tour of the Yuengling Brewery in Tampa. It's a $5,000 prize package you could win if you are the fifth caller at 866-240-1065. If you don't win that, you could win the runner-up prize, a trip for two to the Ohio State-Michigan game at the Horseshoe November 26th with limo service, or a prize pack from Yuengling. To qualify, be the fifth caller now to 866-240-1065 or register online at 1065theticket.com. Good luck. From Yuengling Lager, York Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, Country Hearth Fireplaces and Stoves, Allegiant Air at Toledo Express Airport, Total Image Limousine, and your friends here at Toledo's ESPN 1065 The Ticket. Right back after this.
You always want to win the game. The next best thing is, and we've talked about this before we even started, was try to make them use pitching, even in a loss. So, you know, we hung around enough. At least Chapman had to pitch. You never know. Maybe that helps us. I mean, tonight was a tough night. We're going to go out on a limb and say it's a really important game tomorrow. We'll be really excited to play. You learn from your mistakes and then move on quickly, and we'll do that. It'll be exciting to come to the ballpark tomorrow.
Command has been good for the last 3 years. But no, I don't think it's hurt it. And I think actually I wouldn't want to do this all year, in fairness to him. But I think for a couple starts, I think he can handle it just fine. I think good players, good pitchers can do special things, and he's in that category. It was kind of an easy decision after talking to him. The harder one for me wasn't just him. We had to make sure Trevor was okay, and the same thing with Josh.
I guess for me personally, I spend a little more time doing the different methods of recovery and stuff like that we have available to us. For me personally, I haven't found much of a difference yet in the way I feel when I go out there on 3 days rest as opposed to four. That's really the only difference for me, is spending more time trying to recover on those 3 days instead of having 4 days to do it.
We don't talk about a particular conference in the committee room, and if you've been through one of our mock selections, you understand we talk about the football team. We look at their resume, but we do not pause and look at how many teams we have from a particular conference. Our committee takes our charge of going deeper very seriously. We do look at strength of schedule. We look at quality wins. We look at who teams have beaten, where those games were played. Head-to-head matchups are important to the committee, and eventually down the road, we'll discuss the importance of being a conference champion.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Alrighty, we roll onward now at 13 minutes after 4 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We got about another 47 minutes of outstanding awesomeness for you. You heard a little bit more of the World Series managers there in the opening montage for hour number 2. Also a little bit from the chairman of the College Football Playoff Select Committee. And how about that? A big surprise. I think everybody watching college football last night expected the committee to come out with the top four teams in both of the polls as the top four teams in the college football playoff rankings. Of course, not necessarily in the order of Alabama, Michigan, Clemson, and Washington, but everybody thought those would be the four, with Alabama on top and then some compilation of the other three. And instead, Washington, undefeated despite a week or a win this past weekend over number 17 Utah to stay undefeated, they get leapfrogged by a one-loss Texas A&M team. And not to mention Michigan at number 2 in both polls, checks in only at number 3 behind Clemson in the initial college football playoff rankings. Joining us now to break that down as we talk a little more college football right here on The Ticket is Drew Hallett, who covers University of Michigan for MazeandBrew.com. Hey, Drew, how you been?
Doing great, Bob. How you been?
I am outstanding. Thanks so much. About ready to watch the Indians win a world championship tonight. Very excited about that. Hey, you're up there in, are you in Ann Arbor specifically?
I'm not. I'm actually out in Los Angeles.
Oh, you're in Los Angeles. I'm sorry. I just assume you're up in Michigan because of the Mason Brew thing. So, okay. Do you have a rooting interest in this World Series? Are you like everybody that's not an Indians fan? Are you pulling for the lovable loser Cubbies?
I have no rooting interest. My only rooting interest for this entire World Series was for it to go to Game 7, and that has been granted. So I'm very much looking forward to tonight's game and the excitement, and I'm sure it's going to be
just for the drama. That's the only reason for you for the Game 7, just because it's exciting to, the most exciting thing in sports is Game 7?
Yes. I'm an Angels fan, and so I don't really have a rooting interest for the Indians and the Cubs either way, and I was just hoping for a really good series that would come down to a Game 7, especially with, the history with these two franchises and how long it's been since they've each won a World Series, so I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Gotcha, Drew. Okay, by the way, you're a UM alum then, correct?
Yes.
Okay, I'm trying to make the connection there. So are you from L.A., or did you move out to L.A. after graduation?
I was raised out here in Southern California in the Los Angeles area, and then okay. Went to Michigan for my undergraduate, and now I'm back out here.
Outstanding. Very good. Okay, let's talk about this now. Let's talk about your alma mater. Number 2 in both the AP and the coaches' poll, obviously, for the last several weeks. Well, the last couple of weeks anyway, since Ohio State lost to Penn State. But number 2, and they come in the first ranking at number 3. Obviously, none of this matters at this point in time because there's still a month of football to be played before conference championship games are even played, and that's when we get our final ranking. But were you surprised, and does it bother you at all that Michigan was leapfrogged by Clemson in that ranking?
No, I wasn't that surprised, and it doesn't bother me either. The one thing with, especially right now with being number 2 or number 3 is that it's completely interchangeable. And, if the season were to end today and these were the final rankings, all this would mean was that Clemson is wearing its dark jerseys and Michigan is wearing its white jerseys. They're both going to the same bowl. It'd both be in Arizona, and it would still be the same game played. So ultimately right now, the difference between 2 or 3 is there really is no difference. And, right now it's pretty much just not trying to be in that 4 spot and having to face Alabama in the semifinal. But in terms of how the committee looked at it, it didn't bother me either, because what it showed me, and I'm sure if we discuss Texas A&M, what it showed me is that the committee, at least right now, seems to really be looking at how good a team's resume is or its strength of schedule. And if you look at Clemson versus Michigan, I think that right now Clemson has the better resume, especially after its road win at Florida State. Not by much, but enough. Whereas I think Michigan is actually the better team. And what this shows me is that Clemson, that the committee is looking more at the resume and the strength of schedule than the actual quality of the team. Because, you know, I would say that Clemson's top three wins, which are, you know, the home win against Louisville and the road wins at Auburn and Florida State, probably trump the three really good wins that Michigan has, but they were all at home against Wisconsin, Colorado, and Penn State. So I think that the committee is looking at that, and that's why they put Clemson ahead. But if I did have to say right now, I think Michigan is the better team and would be the favorite on a neutral site.
It's very interesting, and I agree with a whole lot of what you just said. Drew Hallett joining us from MaizeAndBrew.com, a Michigan Wolverines fan site. I don't disagree with much of what you said at all, but I'm just wondering why, I guess I'm saying it does bother me a little bit if I'm a Michigan fan, because while they're considering strength of schedule and the quality Clemson wins, and you're spot on about that, I don't know that they're necessarily looking at the lower quality wins. And what I'm trying to say is when you have I think it was 36-yard field goal by North Carolina State. I'm sorry?
It was 33.
33, thank you. 33-yard field goal by North Carolina State to win that game and to win it or to lose a game for Clemson against an unranked Wolfpack team, and you escape by the skin of your teeth because of that, for crying out loud, that's to me a really bad win for Clemson, and that's one that knocked them down a couple of pegs in the rankings. I think it should keep them down, quite frankly, until they do something more worthy of that. And I admit winning in Tallahassee 37-34 is impressive, but to me it's not as impressive as the near loss to NC State, something they should have lost, was, I guess I can't say depressive, but you understand the point, is that it was just unimpressive.
Right. Yes, and I think that goes to the argument that one of the reasons why I would say Michigan is the better team, because Michigan hasn't really had that close scare. I mean, I guess you could talk about the Colorado game. They were down 21-17 early, but they came back to win that comfortably in the second half. You could talk the Wisconsin game. That was only, you know, a 7-point win, but again, that's a top 10 team. And if you truly look at the stats, Michigan really was, you know, the better team in that game and really had dominated in all areas, but missed field goals and other things was the reason why that was closer than it probably was, at least on the scoreboard. But the thing is that that's why I would think Michigan be the better team. But if you're still looking just at the resume, yes, it was North Carolina State probably should have lost that game. You know, #college kickers. But they still ended up winning that game. They went, they got it done in overtime, and you know they're still undefeated. And if I'm looking at everything as a whole right now, I'm probably still taking Clemson in terms of having the better schedule. You know, they have a higher strength of schedule than Michigan does so far. And I think all that comes into play, but I also think it shows that the committee is looking more at the quality wins and maybe the, you know, the close losses or the bad wins, as you put it.
And I get that. And the thing with Clemson is their toughest tests are now behind them, because their final four games are against all unranked teams: Syracuse, Pitt, Wake, and South Carolina. So and that's a rivalry game, obviously. So it means a little bit something, as we just saw with Michigan and Michigan State, much closer than it should have been. But it's a rivalry game, so that's the way those things go. Whereas Michigan, they still have Ohio State at the end of the schedule, and a win there to get to the conference championship game, I would imagine, would elevate them over everybody but Alabama in the top four for the playoff rankings. But let's talk about Ohio State. Let's talk about one-loss teams and how it is that a one-loss team like Texas A&M, even though their one loss was to Bama, how they were able to get that first nod in the top four over an undefeated Washington team. What is your thought about, you know, if there is going to be a one-loss team that elevates over an undefeated team into this playoffs, that it is A&M?
I was definitely surprised that the committee would put Texas A&M over Washington. Again, it shows that this committee is looking at quality. I don't even know if I'd say necessarily. Well, it shows that they're looking at quality wins and a team's resume. Because I was actually on Twitter on Monday night, and I was talking about Washington, and Washington is undefeated, and usually in this, and they've been a very good team. You know, if you look at a lot of the advanced metrics and rankings and the computer models, Washington is considered one of the top four teams in being that they're undefeated, you would think they would be the number four team in the rankings. But they really, the Pac-12 is weak this year, and Washington did not play a strong non-conference schedule whatsoever. And if you know, one of the rankings I like to use is the S&P Plus, which is by SB Nation's Bill Connolly. Their best, Washington's best win is at, and when they have Utah ranked at number 45 in that rankings, and that was just this past week. They don't have a single S&P Plus top 25 win or even a top 40 win. And because the Pac-12 has been so down, it's going to be tough for them to really build a strong resume because it's just the strength isn't there. And but I was still surprised that A&M.
Let me interject there for a moment, Drew, if I may. Drew Hallett is our guest. He is with MaizeAndBrew.com, Wolverines fan site, talking about the first college football playoff rankings announced yesterday by the committee. I sometimes like to look at games and the where teams were ranked at the time of the game. I understand Stanford is proving to not be very good, and the Pac-10 as a whole, as you say, or Pac-12 as a whole is down. You're right, but at the time that was number seven in the country. And when you and you have a top 10 showdown between two teams and you beat them 44-6, I feel like that's got to carry a little more weight than it does today when you look at Stanford's overall record. At least the committee, I think, should be looking at that and saying, at the time, Stanford, that was a big get-up game for both teams, and Washington simply destroyed them.
See, I completely disagree with that reasoning. Because, look at it from another perspective. Okay, so should Michigan State or should Wisconsin then get credit for a top 10 win after they beat Michigan State back in week four? And now we've seen that Michigan State has since lost six straight and has not been a very good team at all this season.
I would say that is true. That is a very good point. But we're not talking about what Michigan State is in your comparison there. Stanford is 5-3. They're not 2-6 or something like that. They were a top 10 team before. They're not going to be a top 10 team now. They may end up back in the top 25 at some point, depending on how they finish. But we're talking about a team that at the time was considered to be very, very good. And now maybe they're good, but they're not great. And so it devalues it somewhat, certainly, to see them drop games afterwards. But I still feel like when it's a showdown game, if it's a conference showdown game, and one team hammers another one, I feel like it's got to carry more weight than that. But I do understand your point. Go ahead.
Yeah. My whole thought on that is that we have, since that game, we've gotten more data about each of these teams, about how good they actually are, and I think that carries more weight in terms of how we should evaluate how each of these teams are and ranking them, as opposed to using the data that we had at the time that those teams played. So that's just kind of my take on it.
And that's perfectly fair. Because we don't have a ton of time. Let's get to A&M. What is your thought about A&M and the other one loss teams? If Washington's undefeated record is going to be a little less impressive because of all of the reasons you said about the Pac-12 being down, not having a lot of really great quality wins over top ranked opponents, etc. And then that's fine. If somebody's going to leapfrog them that has a loss, why A&M instead of, for example, Ohio State? And we could go through the list of one-loss teams that are there in the top 10, top 12 that could have been vying for that position.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I was going to put a one-loss team ahead of Washington, I would have put Ohio State and not Texas A&M. A&M has not shown that ability to really be one of the more dominant teams in the country. I mean, for me, throughout this season, the top six teams have been obviously Alabama, Michigan, Clemson, Washington, Louisville, and Ohio State. I haven't really even put A&M in that conversation. But I think the committee is looking at the fact that A&M has a road win at Auburn and is really valuing the SEC and is pretty much not punishing A&M at all for losing to Alabama. I think the committee is essentially saying, they lost to Alabama. Everyone loses to Alabama. It's especially in Tuscaloosa. I think it was in Tuscaloosa.
But you know what? But here's the other part about that. And factor this in as you explain why you think Ohio State should have been the one loss team over A&M. Why is Louisville being punished for their loss to Clemson? And that's at Death Valley, so it's on the road. It was a close game, obviously. It was a tremendous football game. And Louisville has been perfect other than that. And they're only seventh. They're behind Ohio State, Washington, and A&M in that battle to be in the top four.
Yeah. Well, I put Louisville ahead of A&M, too.
Okay.
I put both of them over A&M. I honestly was very surprised that A&M was not number seven. I was really shocked to see that they were number four.
So why Ohio State over Louisville, then? Let's do that part of this, then, Drew.
I say Ohio State over Louisville because I would say that Ohio State has the better wins. I know that right now Ohio State has really struggled. You know, the past maybe 2 or 3 weeks, you know, through the first 5 weeks, they were looking like a complete, you know, juggernaut, that Urban Meyer had completely reloaded this team despite all of the departures of the NFL, and that they were just chugging along like there was no problems. But obviously the last 3 weeks, there's been some issues, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But they still have a road win at Oklahoma, which they won by 20-plus points. They did beat Wisconsin in Madison, so that's two very strong road wins. Whereas Louisville's best win is the home win against Florida State. And mind you, they completely eviscerated Florida State. But that's really their only quality win this season. And then you take into an account that they, you know, obviously had this really, you know, almost lost to Virginia this past week. And though Louisville has beat up on opponents, they don't have the strength of schedule or necessarily the number of quality wins that Ohio State does. And, you know, and I take into account the fact that Ohio State lost on a, you know, the block, you know, field goal return, one of those kind of fluky plays. You know, I think, taking that account, if I'm going to rank these one-loss teams, I'm going to put Ohio State ahead of Louisville and then definitely put both of them against A&M. I was very surprised to see A&M at number 4 because I would have had them at 7.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. And I think this is, again, just maybe committee respect for Alabama, as you pointed out. Yeah, everybody loses to Bama. No big deal there. They would be undefeated if it weren't for the Crimson Tide, the mighty, mighty Tide, blah, blah, blah. But I agree with you. I think Louisville has been more impressive. I think Ohio State is a better team, too, top to bottom, even though they haven't played that way in the last 3 or 4 weeks than Texas A&M. Last thing, and we'll let you run. And, again, all of this really is you know, noise right now. It's just for great discussion and conversation to keep the ratings up, et cetera, because, you know, the only ranking that really matters is the one at the end of the season. So let's get to the individual awards. Is Lamar Jackson still the Heisman Trophy winner at this stage of the season?
Yes, without question.
Anybody pushing him?
No, I don't really think so. It's interesting because I feel like Lamar Jackson is just so far ahead of the race right now. I mean, the number of total touchdowns he has, the way that, you know, he's put, you know, the different highlights that he's put together. He had a Heisman moment by, you know, kind of leading that comeback against Virginia last week. But still, you know, being able to, you know, put the team on his back and lead that drive and make that throw with 15 seconds left is still very impressive. But there really isn't anyone that's really pushing that in terms of statistical production. And I think we in the media are trying to kind of find that, you know, who's going to be the person who's pushing him from behind. And, you know, we can talk Jake Browning, quarterback from Washington. We can talk Jabril Peppers, you know, pretty much all position everything at Michigan. We can talk, you know, there's Deshaun Watson, quarterback at Clemson. They're all in that race. But
not anymore for me. But 10 interceptions for Watson, 22 touchdowns to 10 interceptions really kind of takes some of the starch out of his candidacy, in my opinion.
And that's totally fair. But right now I think it's Lamar Jackson. If Louisville keeps winning and he keeps putting up that production, I don't think anyone's going to catch him. But if, let's just say that, you know, maybe Louisville loses another game where Lamar Jackson kind of struggles a little bit. If Michigan ends up going, you know, 12-0 and winning the Big Ten and they have, you know, let's say they have an undefeated season, they beat Ohio State and Columbus, maybe there's enough push momentum for Jabril Peppers to kind of get in that conversation. I mean, maybe make a November push if he has big moments in, you know, especially in the Ohio State game, scores a couple touchdowns along the way.
I was going to say, he's got to get in the end zone, doesn't he? Because that's the one thing that Charles Woodson was able to do as a primarily defensive back. But when he was given the ball and the opportunity on offense and on the kick return game, he was getting into the end zone enough times to make, you know, everybody take notice. It's one thing to be a dominating defensive performer who also plays a little bit on the other side of the ball. But if you're going to play a little bit on the other side, you can't just be good. You're going to have to be great and get into the end zone a few times.
Well, here's the thing. Jabril Peppers actually has as many offensive or non-defensive touchdowns as Charles Woodson did in 1997. They both had 4.
They have to be, but they have to, like you said it yourself, they have to be in the spotlight moments like he did against Ohio State. You know,
that is exactly the point I was going to say.
Yeah,
absolutely agree. It has to be, you know, in kind of that Heisman moment in a big game where it truly matters. You know, that's when people will take notice of his impact. And I do believe that Jabril Peppers is one of the best players in college football in terms of his impact. You know, maybe not even, you know, you don't necessarily always see it in the statistics, but the impact he has defensively and then I assume the more touches he'll get in special teams and offense, he definitely deserves to be in consideration. But he has to have those big moments and big games, score, like, you know, have a score touchdown against Ohio State. And and the truth is that they need Lamar Jackson to really kind of slow down in this final month, because if he doesn't, he's going to win this as a runaway.
Great point. And I would love to see Jabril Peppers be up there and get a shot at this, not just for him and for the Big Ten, but just because I'm tired of the same old, same old. You know, it's a quarterback or a running back always. You don't even haven't had a wide receiver win this award in 20 years or so. So I would love to see somebody else get an opportunity. I think the last non-running back or quarterback to win it might have been Woodson in 97. It might be literally 19 years since anybody that wasn't a running back or quarterback got it. So
yeah, I think that's correct.
Yeah, so I would love to see it happen. Drew Hallett, amazingbrew.com. Check him out online. A great job at that wonderful website for Wolverines fans. Thanks so much for your thoughts on the CFP playoff rankings. And Drew, we'll catch up with you down the line.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Bob.
You got it. Our pleasure. Thank you for joining us. Hey, also, let's shine a spotlight on the high school athletes who are doing great work out there on the field as well. The KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week this week. For the girls, how about St. Ursula Volleyball? The Arrows are number 2 in the state, and they were pushed to the limit Saturday against Perrysburg for the Division I District Final, winning in 5 sets. Senior Maggie Finn and junior Mariah Paulette both came up huge in the final set. St. Ursula, 23-2 on the season, takes on Cleveland St. Joseph Academy on Thursday in the regional semifinal. For the boys, St. John's soccer senior Zach Busher was one of 40 seniors from around the country named to the All-American game, which is going to be played in Raleigh, North Carolina, December 3rd. He'll play his college soccer next season at Bowling Green. So congratulations to our KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week. All right. What we're going to do here is at the bottom of the hour, we're going to take our time out, get a sports center, then we're going to keep talking college football, but not about rankings, but about games. There's a big one tonight in the MAC. Toledo trying to bounce back from a Thursday loss last week against OU, this time at Akron. So Toledo and Akron tonight. We're going to talk to head coach Jason Candle coming up here right after this sports center timeout on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hook up with us on Facebook. Search Facebook /106.5 The Ticket. Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here, hanging out with you here on this Wednesday. We're shifting gears to college football. We're now ankle deep in MACtion for all the Mid-American Conference. And the Toledo Rockets, well, of course, they're part of the MAC, so that means they're part of it. And tonight, they're on the road at Akron. And help us talk all things Toledo Rocket football, we once again welcome in the head coach of the Rockets. He is Jason Candle. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Doing well.
All right. Well, we're in MACtion, but before we get to tonight's game, a quick review of what happened last Thursday out at the Glass Bowl, battle of co-division leaders, and it was Ohio getting the best of it, 31-26. First win for the Ohio Bobcats in the Glass Bowl since 1967. Your thoughts, Coach?
Yeah, I felt like we got out-executed in a couple phases of the game, and, you know, when that happens at this point in the season, you know, we're you know, teams that everybody you play right now on your schedule is a lot of parity in our league and a lot of good teams. And certainly, when you don't play up to your capabilities, you run the risk of get beat. And we certainly, that's what happened.
Yeah, and in this game, you guys brought it to within one midway, a late third quarter, I'd say. But then the Bobcats ran out 10 points in a row, including midway through the fourth quarter, a 51-yard touchdown strike. That put them up 11. And, what more can you say in some ways? This is an Ohio program with Coach Solich down there. They've done an outstanding job turning that program around. It's not one of the stronger teams overall in the Mid-American Conference these last couple years, but a finish like that's got to hurt.
Yeah, you know, give them a lot of credit. They made the plays that needed to be made to win the football game, and we didn't. You know, we are a work in progress. We got to continue to get better. We got to coach better. We got to play better, and we all have to tighten the screws down a little bit here and get moving, because it doesn't get any easier as we move forward.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And Logan Woodside in this one, 46 passing attempts, 32 completions, did have 3 touchdowns, picked 438. Swanson and Hunt, though, only had 58 and 50 yards respectively. Was this just a function of the game being the way it was, or was Ohio doing something to slightly slow down your run game?
Yeah, they have the best rush defense in our conference for a reason. They got some good players on the defensive front. You know, we were playing without our, you know, right guard and right tackle. You know, we kind of banged up on our offensive line. Certainly not an excuse not to rush the football, because if anybody knows, you know, what it takes to, you know, be around, you know, the weather climate in Northwest Ohio or Northeast Ohio. You know, it's our staff, you know, and at the end of October, early November, you certainly must run the football and you must stop the run to be very good if you want to compete for a championship or if you want to be in that conversation. So, you know, we didn't probably run it as well or as much as we normally would, just probably due to the fact that, you know, we got behind a little bit, you know, and we had some guys dinged up. And you know, it didn't really affect us on the yardage total of things. I mean, we gained a lot of yards, but as you know, gaining a lot of yards, that doesn't win football games. You got to score points, and, you know, we certainly didn't do that. We got, you know, too many self-inflicted wounds and penalties, drop balls, you know, just kind of like I said earlier, just out-executed.
Talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza. And you're talking about the run game, and you're so right, especially this time of year, whether you're playing on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Saturday, or whatever. The flip side of that defensively, Brown goes off for a 212. Is this just a case of maybe some missed assignments, missed tackling, or was he just that good?
He's a good back, and not to take any credit away from him, but certainly we didn't stop him. We didn't do a good enough job of maintaining gap responsibility, and we didn't do a good enough job when our run fits, you know. And like I said, you got to be able to stop the run, and you got to be able to run it, you know, at this point in time to be competitive, because it certainly helps dictate the clock. It certainly helps, you know, the physical standpoint of things is man, oh, man, that's a key component of winning down the stretch in college football for sure.
First MAC loss of the season for the Toledo Rockets. 3-1 now in the league, 6-2 overall. Jim Cushing here in the Extravaganza. We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets. You guys are now, of course, everybody is pretty much now ankle and knee deep in the action. We're all shifting our calendars to the weekday affairs. And you guys have another tough one on the road tonight. And you said it perfectly a few minutes ago, coach. It's still a tough schedule for you guys. Pretty much down the rest of the way. Another East team, they came into last week, the co-leaders with the Ohio Bobcats, but they still are pretty solid for them. That's Akron. You're on the road against them. What can you tell us about them?
Well, they got a lot of playmakers on both sides of the football. You know, they've had some trouble with being consistent themselves, but certainly, you know, that when you lose your quarterback and to injury, you know, during the middle of the season, that's got something to do with that. But he's back now, and, you know, I'm sure trying to find back his rhythm with his guys. And, you know, but they got some playmakers on the perimeter that can certainly beat you, and some guys on defense that can get after the quarterback. So we got to be ready to go for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And three of these last four games, all during the weekdays, three Wednesdays and a Friday coming up here for the remainder of the schedule. But three of the four on the road, and it starts with this one tonight in Akron. How important is it to make sure that that you guys are able to be more consistent, especially on both sides of the ball? Because, you know, the way it's shaping up, you guys probably cannot afford another conference loss just the way Western Michigan is playing if you hope to get to that MAC title game.
Yeah, Western Michigan really is not a concern to me at all. I think anybody looking ahead down the road, that's something that doesn't concern me. My concerns are internal. My concerns are getting better every day and handling what Toledo's got to handle. You know, I don't, in my heart of hearts, don't believe firmly that, you know, we got beat the other night. I think our physically, out-physicaled, or from that standpoint of things, the attitude and the effort was great. I just feel like, you know, we cost ourselves a football game. And, you know, if we don't fix those mistakes, we'll cost ourselves another one down the road, and, you know, or potentially more than one down the road. So we got to fix those things. We got to handle what's in house, you know, moving forward, and certainly won't look ahead past what today holds.
Absolutely, fair enough. Well, let me worry about some of that stuff. But it is a tough opponent in Akron. As you mentioned, they could do a couple things. Any things in the game plan you're looking to take advantage of when it comes to Akron?
Well, we got to make the quarterback uncomfortable, and, you know, and get him off of his spots. But certainly got to stop the run, you know, and we got to handle the football on our end. We got to take care of the ball and score touchdowns.
We're talking with head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, here on the Extravaganza. It's the Rockets on the road tonight. They're at Akron. That's a 7:30 kickoff. The schedule doesn't get any easier, of course, after that. It's a couple more road games, throwing in the Glass Bowl finale a couple Wednesdays from now. So it is still a tougher schedule down the stretch. Coach, best of luck out there tonight, and we're hoping when we reconvene next week, talking about another Rockets win.
Thanks so much, Jim. Have a great night.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, taking a few minutes to talk to us. I love his answer right there, you know, because he won't admit it. He's got to do what he's got to do from a coach's perspective. Keep these guys engaged. Make sure they're fixing some of the things he was talking about, the inconsistencies that especially popped up against the Bobcats at the Glass Bowl last week on Thursday. But, yeah, he's right. He can't be looking ahead necessarily to Western Michigan. He's got to keep his guys focused on the task at hand, which is the Akron Zips tonight. So we'll have guys like me do that. And the simple fact of the matter is Western Michigan has been so solid this year, the Toledo Rockets absolutely positively cannot afford another loss. If they have any hopes of getting to the Mid-American Conference title game, it's going to basically at this point now require, with the loss last week to Ohio, it's going to require winning out. It's as simple as that. Akron's a little bit tougher than they usually are. They're 5-4, but they are at home, and coming into last week they were tied with the Ohio Bobcats for the East Division lead. Then it's at Northern Illinois, and that's been a thorn, of course, in the Rockets' side, as we've known for these last couple years, and it's in DeKalb. Yes, Northern Illinois is struggling, but to a certain degree, if you're the Rockets, you can't pen that up as a W when you're thinking about it until you actually go out there and do it, since the Huskies have won so many in a row now against the Rockets. Then it's the Glass Bowl finale against Ball State. They're struggling a little bit this year, but hey, you fall asleep and bad things could happen, as is usually the case. That's usually more the case in Muncie, but the Rockets will get them at the Glass Bowl. Then it's on to Kalamazoo on Black Friday to take on Western Michigan. If the Rockets can win these next three, then that game still remains a battle for the West Division title and a trip to the Mid-American Conference championship game. So again, you know, coach can't really do it. That's not his place. He's got other things he's got to worry about, and all of that is completely legitimate. So yeah, let guys like me look ahead a little bit. And the moral of the story when it comes to Toledo Rockets, after this loss last week to Ohio, starting tonight with Akron, you got to win the next three, period, end of story, going into that Western Michigan game. A loss in any of these games, and the Toledo Rockets will once again be shut out, I think, of the Mid-American Conference title game. And it's not Northern Illinois, though, this year. It would be the Western Michigan Broncos. So that's going to do it for this Wednesday edition of the Extravaganza. Rockets 7:30 kickoff tonight. They are in Akron for all the fun action play. And, of course, a couple other things obviously going on over the course of the next few days. We got Thursday Night Football. You got some high school playoffs and hockey and all sorts of other things. And we'll reconvene to talk about all that and more tomorrow. Drive Time with Mike Miller is next, so stick around for that.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.